Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to CeraBoost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We're champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Lu Ngo, coming to your ears from NARM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's learn together. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to CeraBoost. And on this week's episode, we are going to talk about how admiring others change your behavior. That sounds like a fascinating topic, and I'm excited to talk to our guest today, Josh Gressel, about the topic. Josh is a clinical psychologist in the San Francisco Bay Area and a student of Jewish mysticism. He is the author of Embracing Envy, Finding the Spiritual Treasure in Our Most Shameful Emotion, published in 2014 by University of America Press. Thank you so much for joining us today, Josh. How are you?
I'm fine, Lou. Thank you for having me aboard.
Yeah, well, I think it's taken us a while to finally make this happen, so I'm excited. And I think this topic, along with your book, I think they kind of go hand in hand to a certain extent. And so we'll explore the topic very soon. I think, you know, like when we talk about admiring others to change our behavior, coupled with a little bit of, you know, like the touch of envy that you mentioned in your book, I think it will be a very interesting topic to explore for our audience, because this is a new thing, especially for me. Like, I know this is a new thing. I don't discuss this with other people very often. Now, before we get there, I'm curious about your professional journey, because, you know, for you to write a book on embracing envy, you know, there's got to be a story there. So I'm curious to hear what the story was, you know, how you got here in your career and why you decided to choose the line of work you did and write the book that you did.
Okay, well, there are several questions, Lou, in what you're asking there. Let me start with the book, which came about because for many, many years, I would find myself being envious of people who were writers, people who wrote books. And I would just get upset every time I'd hear about somebody who was like famous for writing or had written a book or anything like that. And I finally had to admit to myself that it was envy that I was feeling, that I wanted to write a book myself. So it took me a while to admit that. But once I did, I thought, you know, what better way for me to get myself to write than to tackle the very thing that's making me want to write a book, which is my envy. Why not explore envy as a way to write the book? So it was kind of combining my own process, noticing that I was very envious of people who wrote, and seeing if I could make use of my envy to better understand. Well, let me back up a second. My basic premise is that when we envy somebody, it's not that there's something wrong with us, it's that there's something right with us that we're not claiming. And the same, by the way, could be said for admiring somebody. We admire something in another person, it's something that is actually dormant or not as fully developed within ourselves. You know, you don't just randomly admire somebody, you admire somebody where you have a certain resonance with them, kind of like tuning forks that, you know, you get close to them and it starts. And it can be, let's think of it as a continuum. Then the positive side of the continuum would be admiration and the negative side would be envy. Mm. And I think the only thing that really separates those two is how secure we feel in ourselves. If we feel more secure, we can say, I really admire the way you conduct this podcast. You're just amazing at it, Lou. If I'm less secure, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to withhold from you. And I'm going to be saying all kinds of nasty things to myself about you. Mm. You know, you're this or you're that. And really it's envy.
Yeah.
So the thing that kind of determines where you fall on that continuum is how secure you feel in that particular thing that you're admiring or envying. I hope I'm being clear. I'm kind of going all over the map to start off here, but maybe I better pause and see if it's making any sense.
Oh, no, definitely. I really love that because I do think that there's a really big element there of, you know, knowing yourself and being happy with where you are at to be able to say, you know, like, I'm not envious of this person and I'm truly happy for them, you know, which is a really hard thing to achieve. And in fact, I talked to my friend about it the other day and she was kind of saying, you know, like, some people just don't hold information in a way that would make you feel good about your good news. Because, you know, there could be envy there, there could be other emotions there. And so sometimes she was saying she doesn't feel safe opening up to other people for that reason. And I kind of linked that with, you know, what you just shared about envy. I think it's really true. And, you know, for us to be able to feel secure enough to not have that envious emotion within us when we, you know, like admire somebody else, for example, that it's really helpful. And it's hard to achieve, but it's really helpful because it creates that kind of balance. But anyway, we digress. Let's go back to talking about your career. So this is all fascinating how you kind of like have this story about, you know, like writing a book on envy and embracing envy. But I'm sure there must have been so many things that you've done in your career so far. So, you know, what else is there that you would like to share with our audience?
Well, this is actually my second career. My first career, I was living on a kibbutz in Israel, which is a kind of communal farm settlement. They're actually very much in the news right now because of all that's been happening in Israel and what happened there. And so I was living on a kibbutz in Israel, and I decided that I needed to do something else. I wanted to find a school that would combine spirituality and psychology. And this was back in the days before the internet. So I was living in Israel. This is back in the 80s. I had to have my mother send me all these college catalogs and went to the U.S. Embassy and looked through all kinds of things. And anyhow, the three schools I found were all in the San Francisco Bay Area, which in some ways, if you know the United States and the demographics and things, it's not a surprise that the schools that combine spirituality and psychology would be in the San Francisco area. So that got me there. I did my master's first and my doctorate, and, you know, it's a long, long road. It was about 13 years altogether to, you know, go through the schooling and the licensing and everything like that, you know, with kids and all that. And, you know, I've been in private practice for most of my adult career right now. And I just like now to get back to the first part, I was noticing that I was feeling I needed to write something. So that's where the book came in.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing. Now, I know you've shared quite a bit about your career and your book, but we still want to get to know you better. So we're going to try and get to know you better through this part we called Have You Met Josh? We're going to get some of your favorite things and or things that you would like to share with our audience just so we get to know you better. First thing we would like to know is what is a book that you have been enjoying lately?
Yeah, I'm reading right now a book called Wartime. It's about the inner world of people who were spies in World War II in Britain. I like it because it's very psychological and is beautifully written and truthfully written. It's not a cliche kind of book.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That must, you know, really add to your professional learning in a way. And that sounds like a fascinating read, you know. And what about a movie that you have enjoyed recently?
Recently?
Yeah.
I thought these questions, when I looked ahead of time, I thought it was like my favorite movie of all time.
You can talk about your favorite movie of all time as well. If you know, that can be something you enjoy at all times.
That's Apocalypse Now would be my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of play between darkness and light. Mm-hmm. I like movies that have a lot of darkness. For me, it needs to have the right balance between darkness and light. I don't like kind of sugary sweet movies. And I don't like movies that are so dark that I just want to, you know, shoot myself in the head. They're so, oh my God, this is awful. I like the balance, and Apocalypse Now is a great balance for me.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, a lot of our guests actually don't listen to podcasts. I wonder if you do, and if so, what is your favorite one?
You know, I'd say probably overall, it's this is in the United States, so I don't know that it's in Australia, but it's called The Daily. It's something the New York Times puts out every day. It's got 8 million listeners, so I know there's a lot of people who do tune in. But it's a more in-depth, they go more in-depth into something of from the news from that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I think I've listened to it quite a few times. It's a pretty good podcast. And it's not something that you only listen if you're based in the US. I think it's kind of like, you know, you can tune in for the news. It's pretty good. Now, I know we sort of sent you the question about famous role model, but I like to reformulate it a bit because sometimes people don't have famous role models. So who would be your role model? It doesn't have to be a famous person.
Yeah. You know, the people I admire the most are the people who are most modest. So they're not for me. They're almost never famous. I sometimes ask this question, can you be famous and be balanced? And I tend to think the answer is no. So the people that I admire the most are the people who do a lot and don't draw attention to themselves, who give of themselves without making a big to-do about it. They kind of exist behind the scenes. Modesty is the thing I admire the most.
Yeah, beautiful. And final question in this part, what is a course you've completed that left a really strong impact on you?
Well, that's a hard one because I'm always taking something. Lifelong education is just kind of how I live and breathe. Right now, I'm currently studying two things simultaneously in some depth. One is the Jewish mysticism and the other is the use of psychedelics with psychotherapy. And they kind of cross-pollinate. The Jewish mysticism provides a conceptual overview for what it means to take a psychedelic. I'm not going to ask you on air, Lou, if you've ever taken psychedelics. I won't put you in that spot. But if you ever have, you know that you go to some very strange places. And there are people who have mapped out this territory. And so that's the Jewish mysticism kind of gives me a conceptual roadmap. And the psychedelics bring life to my study. It's not just an abstract academic study, but it's a lived experience. So it's a real nice combination, those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing. Definitely something different from what we normally hear on this podcast, but interesting nonetheless. Now, let's talk about today's topic. I think we've waited long enough for this, and everyone was probably curious about how admiring others change your behavior. So we'll start by, first of all, talking about happiness, because that's what the show is about. So first of all, to you personally, what does happiness mean?
You know, I looked at that question and I'll say this and then I'll try to answer the question. For me, the goal of life is not happiness. And I know that everybody thinks, you know, it's all about happiness. I don't think so personally. I think it's about wholeness, that we become the fullest version of ourselves that we possibly can. When that happens, or as that's happening, happiness is a natural byproduct of wholeness, but I don't think it can or should be the goal itself. I think it just will naturally happen. But if you're after happiness directly, in my opinion, in my experience, you tend to get self-focused. And so I prefer to think about a search for wholeness, and that means all the sides of ourselves, which is our need to be of service in the world. You know, I don't know if I'm allowed to use the G word. I do have a spiritual practice, a religious practice, so I do believe in God. But if your listeners are turned off by that, we can just use other language. We're here for a reason, and finding out that reason and stepping into that reason and embodying that reason is my definition of wholeness, which brings happiness along with it. So yeah. Is that clear enough, or should I try to talk more about happiness?
I think that is pretty clear. And, you know, I'm sure our audience, because of their diverse background, they would, you know, have a religious belief or they would not have any religious belief whatsoever. But I think everyone can relate to what you just shared there. Because a lot of the times on this show, we have talked about the fact that happiness is more like a byproduct of whatever it is that you're, you know, pursuing in life, whether it be a goal, a purpose, you know, lots of things can bring happiness along with it. It's not necessarily a goal in itself. And it's never going to be there all the time. So that's what we've talked about quite a bit. And so one of the biggest misconceptions that we all agree that people sometimes have is the fact that happiness is not a destination and you're not always happy. That just cannot be. So that is quite common of a theme, and it's related to what you just said earlier. But I'm also curious because, you know, with your background as a clinical psychologist and, you know, having actually, especially with the book that you've written, right, on envy, you know, that's kind of like something that people, when they hear, they're kind of like, oh, that's definitely not something that's related to happiness. Actually, it might be. Who knows? So I'm curious to hear from your perspective, what are some of the other misconceptions you think people might have when they think about happiness?
Yeah, well, another one, I also do couples counseling. And one of the biggest ones is that our partner is supposed to make us happy. And marriage is supposed to be all about happiness. And I try to disabuse couples about that right away. Mm. It'd be nice. I mean, it's nice if you feel happy with your partner, but yeah. I don't believe that's the primary reason you should be together. Mm-hmm. And couples don't like to hear this, but it's the same thing that I was saying earlier about the goal of marriage is wholeness, not happiness. It's two partial beings who bring baggage, their own baggage from their own past into the relationship. And through a combination of attraction and repulsion, through things that work well and things that are a struggle, two partial individuals grow into a greater state of wholeness. And again, happiness can come along with that and usually will come along with that, but it cannot be the primary goal. Mm-hmm. If it's the primary goal in a relationship, you end up getting into a kind of barter system, you know, like, okay, you get to go out on Wednesday nights, I get to go out on Thursday nights, I took care of the kids on Saturday, so you have to take care of them on Sunday. And you're always going to feel like you're doing more or giving more than you're receiving if you're in that kind of system. Mm. I'm not saying that couples don't need to be work together and compromise. No, of course they do, but there should be an overarching vision of why you're together that transcends how happy you're making me. That's the number one thing I would want to disabuse people of. Your partner's not there to make you happy. They're there to make you whole. Yeah.
Well, I really like that. And, you know, like one of the things that it's so big for me when it comes to relationship is, you know, that person is not supposed to fix you or make you happy, just like what you're saying, but more so, you know, enhancing your happiness. And, you know, you're happy by yourself, first of all. And then when that person comes along, it's just like, oh, great. You know, like my happiness is enhanced. I know how to enjoy myself even better. And I know how to work on myself even more. And I think that's the beauty of, you know, being in a partnership. And when it comes to happiness, that is so true. We actually haven't mentioned that on this particular show because we have a whole other show at LMSL called Reloscope. It's about relationship science. So I'm sure they talk about that quite a bit on that show already. But I like that you mentioned this part in this podcast because I don't get to talk about that very often. So yeah,
that's fun. I want to try and correct that. I'm not sure I expressed myself clearly.
Yeah, go for it.
Your partner doesn't enhance. I mean, your partner may enhance your happiness. I shouldn't say they don't, but it's actually through the struggle that you have with your partner. The things that, you know, one of the things we like to say is you pick the person who can best create your worst nightmare. That you choose somebody who pushes your buttons in this unique way that really gets under your skin. That is the magic of relationships. Even though it's what makes people come to couples counseling or what makes people want to leave their partner, that very button pushing, that very sensitivity, when dealt with consciously, brings greater understanding, greater wholeness, and then greater happiness because you're a bigger, broader, more secure individual than you were before you met that person.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes with the struggle.
Yeah, definitely.
Not just with the nice stuff that you get there.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's not going to be rainbow and sunshine all the time, right? So that is important to keep in mind. And yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, especially, you know, today we're talking about admiring others. And, you know, I'm sure we're not just talking about strangers or friends. We're going to talk about, you know, family, partners. So that's going to be good to keep in mind and quite relatable to the topic. And speaking of the topic, today we are talking about, you know, how admiring others can change your behavior, which is quite a fascinating concept, especially when you put it into the context of happiness, you know. So how does admiring others actually impact our behaviors?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think if we understand that we are admiring somebody else for something that we want to develop within ourselves, like you asked me, who are the people that I admire most? And for me, I said, people who are modest. That for me is a really core value. And my admiring somebody else who's modest means I want to develop that modesty within myself. So in that way, by watching how somebody can give so much and not, you know, advertise it or do a look at me about it, but, oh, wow. I can tell you, I had a dream recently where this guy in my synagogue showed up in the dream, and I thought, why is he there? And what came to me, you may not know this in Australia, but if somebody who's gone to school at Harvard, you know, it's the kind of number one university in the United States, you typically know about it within 15 minutes of meeting them. Somehow or another, they work it into the conversation.
Okay.
This particular guy from my synagogue who showed up in my dream, I knew him well for 30 years before I found out that he went to Harvard. And so it was for me the example of real modesty. 30 years and I never knew it. So how can admiring somebody, did you say change your behavior?
Impact your behaviors, yeah.
Impact your behavior. Yeah, I think if any of us can just think of what we admire in others as a key to what we want to develop within ourselves. Because again, I don't believe we just randomly admire. I don't, for example, admire somebody who drives a big, fast car and could, you know, I mean, I just don't care about that kind of stuff. Or sports is really terrific in sports. If you just think about all the things you don't care about or you don't really admire, it's because they're not in you and you don't really want to do anything with them. It's the ones that you admire are telling you, huh, this is something in you you want to bring out more fully. So to the degree that we do that, that impacts, again, I'm losing the language you use, but that impacts who we are or how we behave in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of why we sort of mentioned this aspect of, you know, the psychological mechanism at play when we ask you this question, because, you know, I'm sure if we just bring this topic to any two regular humans, they can probably say, oh, you know, like admiring others help me to learn or so on. But like you're saying, I think you're touching on something there that is psychologically related, which is there's got to be a reason why you admire people or you admire something, because that is probably like your case. It is something that you think of as your core value, which is why you admire something from that particular person. Now, I'm also curious because, you know, like there are, like certainly there's a lot to think about when we notice that, oh, like I'm admiring this person or that person. There's got to be a certain level of self-perception and self-esteem at play. And it's kind of similar to what you were mentioning at the beginning when you talk about your book, you know, because, you know, we envy people or things that people have for a certain reason as well. So it's kind of like, this is kind of the reverse, you know, admiring others instead of envy. There's got to be a reason there. And, you know, in the process of admiring others and, you know, changing our behaviors or, you know, moderating our behavior, however, whichever word you want to choose, how do you think the role of self-perception and self-esteem play here, especially from a psychological perspective?
I think they're very important. You know, if you just think of two examples, let's say you think of yourself as not successful, that you haven't made much of your life, you know, you're working in a dead-end job. I think you're going to be feeling more envy than anything else. You're just going to be envious of people who've got, seem to have better lives, and everybody seems like they've got a better life than you. And everything just kind of reinforces that negative self-perception. They can do it and I can't. Whereas if you feel better about yourself, if you feel some sense of agency in your life, you'll look at somebody and admire them openly. So, wow, you are really amazing what you can do. And then you might think, yeah, I want to do that too. Or how do you do that? Or can you teach me? Or, you know, there's so many ways. There is a phrase, let me see if I can get it. This is what, Lou, don't get old because your brain doesn't work as well when older.
We're all going to get old sometime.
Yeah. Oh, here it goes. Social propinquity. It did come to me.
Yeah,
social
it came to you.
Yeah. Propinquity means closeness, social propinquity. It's one of the factors in envy, that there needs to be some way that you're close enough to them that you're going to identify in some way. Again, it's like the same thing we were saying before, that you don't just randomly envy, you don't just randomly admire. And let's just say, I don't know if you're comfortable saying, do you have any hobbies or any musical instruments you play?
Yeah, I play the guitar.
Play the guitar. Okay. So you will probably admire somebody like, let's say, Eric Clapton. I don't think you're going to be envious of him because he's probably way too far past where you are.
Yeah.
Somebody who's closer to you, you can, you know, like, let's say they started playing guitar at the same time you did and they can play a lot more than you can, you're going to probably envy them because we envy those who are, I can't, let's just, I'm going to put a random number, say like 10 to 20% past us on where they are, not 1,000% past us. You know, like if you want more money, you're not going to be envying, I don't know, the richest person in the world because that's just out of your realm. You're going to envy somebody who's got like 10 or 20% more than you. It's kind of, I think of it as some kind of like a gravitational orbit. They have to be close enough to us for the tractor beam of our envy to latch onto them, you know, so that we can suddenly start focusing on them. But we will do it in things that we actually care about. And one of the things that the research has shown about this is that this whole thing, I'm going to put in another term here. It's called mimetic desire. This was a French, Jacques Lacan talked about this, where we want what other people want. Not what other people have, what other people want. Mm. If you think about it, you see this with kids. Like there's some toys on the floor. And, you know, let's say Johnny picks up the truck and suddenly Billy wants that truck. He didn't care about it until Johnny picked it up because Johnny wants the truck, then Billy wants this truck. That's called mimetic desire. And what we think that's about is that it helps us to form a social cohesion that we kind of all will want the same thing. You will want, you know, I don't know what kind of place you're living in, but let's say you see your neighbor's got new granite kitchen counters, and her desire for granite kitchen counters is going to trigger your desire for granite kitchen counters. And so we have this social thing where everybody's kind of wanting the same thing. It can also work like your sister-in-law goes to graduate school and you know, starts a new career. Oh, I want that too. And we just use these this mimetic desire to expand who we are and who we can be. I think I'm staying on topic here. We're talking about admiring, mimetic desire, yeah, and social propinquity. They're all kind of in the same basket.
Yeah, so definitely you were so on topic there. And I think it's a new thing for me to learn today. And I think from my perspective as someone who is not that used to all these, you know, psychological concepts, I can still try to like translate it in a way that helps me, because now I realize that, you know, like all the things that I do like, I have been exposed to them. Or like if the things that I admire in other people, it is because I see that in them, or I see that in myself, like something that I want, for example. And I think a big part of it is like when you really put that in perspective, it's how you get influenced by people around you, by circumstances, by, you know, society. And it's kind of like really hard to just like out of nowhere admire something that you didn't know existed, right? So I think for me, it's kind of like that is something we probably don't pay a lot of attention to, how much influence we get on a daily basis, you know, people that we interact. And you know what? It's interesting because even if you interact with this person at a cafe for like 5 minutes, you might admire something about them. There's something about them that you just kind of like, oh, like I really admire that. That is so amazing. For example, they're so open and they're so, you know, fun to talk to. They're so just like full of life. Like that is something that we can pick up on. But when I think about it, there's a thing that sort of stood out to me, which is the fact that we get easily influenced by whatever it is that we get exposed to on a daily basis, whoever it is that we meet on a daily basis, which is probably both good and bad to a certain extent, because I do know that for a lot of people, they kind of admire people so much that they don't really have their own identity. And what I mean by that is, you know, like admiring others, as you were saying, that can impact our behaviors to do better, to be better, which is great. But then if we constantly look for cues from other people, things that we just keep admiring other people and keep trying to be like them, like that person in this sense and like the other person in another sense, we kind of lose that sense of identity a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, I think the way you're phrasing it also gives a clue, because we have to be anchored in ourself. Mm-hmm. If all you're doing is out there, you know, I want to be like her in this and him in that, and there's no inside, there's no inner anchor, that there's nothing, all you're going to be doing is imitating people.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I'm talking about, and I think what you're suggesting too, is we have to be developing ourselves, using outside people to help us understand where we'd like to go. Mm. Yeah. But one of the other things, and this actually took me until only very recently, you do need to eventually come to realize that every single person has got their limitations. Even the people you admire the most, everyone's got their limitations, and there's nobody you should want to be exactly like, because you don't want the whole package. You'll see there's stuff in there that you won't want. So it's a way to temper the admiration so you don't get into some kind of idol worship.
Yeah.
I think, by the way, it's particularly important to do that if you're in any kind of spiritual community.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Spiritual communities invite a transpersonal admiration. Not just, I like the way you do your hair, or I like the way you're so open, but, you know, the old guru thing that they can be like a stand-in for God. And nobody can be that. And it's very, very, very dangerous to let anyone become that. Mm. So admiration can be very problematic in spiritual communities.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. I think it's an example that, you know, if our audience can relate to, they would probably say yes. I'm not in any of those communities myself, but I do hear from friends, you know, like sometimes, and they mention that it can get really tricky, because, you know, the proximity is so close, and then you have like a really tight-knit community, and it's kind of hard for them to navigate. But even without one, right? Because you're mentioning like this.
Are you talking, Elu, about friends who are in spiritual communities?
Pardon?
Are you talking about friends who are in spiritual communities? Is that what you're referring to?
Okay. Yeah. So coming back to the point. So, you know, even without being in a spiritual community, I think this is still actually one of the other problems, because some people might be really close to, let's say, their group of friends. doesn't have to be a spiritual community. It could be any other kinds of communities. And that is kind of hard for them to navigate, right? Because you just mentioned sometimes people just lose their sense of identity. And that was kind of the point that we were discussing earlier. And we need to be anchoring ourselves in our sense of our own, in the sense of our own identity, which is super important. But there's also that other aspect. The other pitfall would be comparison. Admiring is great, but you know, the trap of comparison and envy, which is something that you've wrote about in your book, I think it's quite close. Because once you start admiring other people and you're kind of like, oh, you know, that's so amazing, that could easily turn into, oh, they have that and I'm like not there yet. You know, like this is, and then it just creates a whole spiral. And I think that's another pitfall that we need to look out for when we think, okay, you know what, admiring other people will help me to moderate my behavior. I'm going to get to, you know, where they are, that's like a certain point that I want to be like them. Not everything like them, but, you know, a certain thing that I want to be like that person. I admire them. So how can we navigate that trap? Because, you know, on the one hand, you have, you know, losing all your sense of identity. And on the other hand, you have this problem of continuously comparing yourself to other people. And it seems like you're never going to get to whatever it is that you want to go to. And it's just frustrating for a lot of people. Then they don't feel a sense of achievement or, you know, fulfillment in their lives at all.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a tough thing to navigate. I think we have to start off with the supposition, the hypothesis that everything is predicated on. It's within us. We are all we need to be. There is nobody I've ever, ever, ever met who's a mistake. There's nobody, I mean, it just doesn't happen. So we're all the way we're supposed to be. We can become more of who we're supposed to be, yes. But it doesn't mean we have to change ourselves because we're somehow defective, because we don't look like this one, or we don't act like that one, or we're not successful. All that comparison stuff that you're referring to stems from a lack of a sense of self. Mm-hmm. When we have a solid anchor internally, we can see these other people and admire them or want to emulate them. By the way, we can even feel envy. It's okay to feel envy, just own it, you know? Yeah. I can tell it. There was a woman I met, and we were walking together, and she was driving me nuts. I thought, oh, she takes up so much space. She's so loud. She's a da-da-da. Finally, I had to say to myself, you know what? You're envious of her. Oh. And I told her. I said, oh, I think I'm envious of you. And she hugged me. She was so happy I said that. And we became best friends. And I learned so much from her. You know, it's okay to feel envy. Just own it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Because, you know, like I think growing up, there's this thing where some people just got on my nerves for some reason. And then, you know, later on, I would reflect on that. I'll be like, so were they actually annoying, or was I just envious of something that they had and I just didn't have? You know, it was actually real. It's a really tough thing to own up to, right? Because then you realize, okay, I need to work on this. I need to work on that. And sometimes people can be annoying. You know, sometimes people can get onto your nerves. But other times it could just be that you're envious of something that they have. So it's really like a big self-work thing that you need to figure out. And I think I like that you mentioned this key thing of, you know, knowing who you are and just having a really strong anchor in your own identity, because that solves all of the other pitfalls that we were just discussing. It could be anything. You know, when you start admiring other people, you'll start noticing all these different pitfalls. But if you have a strong sense of self and you know why you're feeling what you're feeling, and going right back to emotions, which is something we talk about on this show so often, you know, like no, there's no bad emotion. Everything is a signpost. It tells you what you need to know about yourself. And I think that is so important, because like you're saying, yeah, it's totally fine to be envious. Maybe you are envious for a reason. Maybe you're actually admiring something. So I think we can turn that, you know, feeling of envy into admiration. Like, oh, actually, you know what? I actually admire that person. It can be intimidating, but I want to talk to them about it and maybe I'll learn from them directly, like your friend.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know what I was going to say. I like to say that envy is the universal emotion that nobody has, because there has not, I did a lot of research on this. It's throughout all of recorded history. Envy is through all of recorded history. I mean, in the Old Testament, it's already right in the, with Cain and Abel. It's like the first biblical story. There's envy. It's in every single language in the world, there's at least one word for envy. And nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to acknowledge their envy. Because to say that I'm envious, you have to admit that I feel lesser than you. And that's a very difficult thing for a lot of us to do, to just own it. But once you do it, everything opens up. It's like, oh yeah, okay. You don't mind if anybody says they're envious of you. You find it makes you feel closer to them. You don't have to, I don't think we should ever feel ashamed of it or embarrassed about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point that, you know, we should all remember, especially when it comes to, you know, embracing this feeling of, you know, like I admire other people. There might be other emotions that get in the way, like envy, just like you're saying. And it's fine to admit it. It's going to be hard, you know, not that easy. It's easy to say, but harder to do. So I think it's going to be a process. And speaking of doing, let's talk about a practice, because we've discussed this at length. You know, we've covered quite a few things that might seem theoretical to our audience. So I'm sure they would probably appreciate something a bit more practical. Now, so which practice do you personally employ or you would recommend to our audience so that they can change their behavior when admiring others?
Yeah, I don't have a set thing that I can give you a name for, but I would say the step number one is self-honesty. You have to admit to yourself what you're actually feeling. Like you just said, there's no such thing as a bad feeling. If you reject some of your feelings, you are losing important information that your psyche is providing to you. So let yourself be truthful about what you're actually feeling, whether it's admiration or whether it's envy. I would imagine admiration is an easier thing to admit than envy. So that's number one. Number two is to start to think, what does this mean that I admire this in you or that I'm envious about this in you? And it's not always a one-to-one correspondence. Like if I admire in you or if I'm envious, I'm thinking of an example. I found myself when I would, I don't know, again, in Australia, if you have this, but we have all these tabloid magazines at the supermarket checkout line, you know, all the people and, you know, movie stars, all that kind of stuff is at the checkout. And I found myself envious of these movie stars. And I don't really want to be a movie star. So it didn't really make sense to me. Like, it's like, it didn't add up. And it took me some thinking to that. I wasn't envious. I didn't want to be a movie star, but I needed to become more visible in my life. I was holding myself back too much. And so once I started to let myself become more visible, showing up on podcasts and things like this, I stopped envying Britney Spears and her latest escapade, you know, whatever put her on the cover of People magazine. So step number one is being self-honest, recognizing your feelings. Step number two is to try and understand where those feelings are coming from. Another trick I like to use is if you dreamt that you admired so-and-so for this reason, how would you interpret that dream? What would that mean to you? Because oftentimes our feelings are expressing something symbolically, not just concretely and practically. I admire your hair. Well, what does that mean really? Do you want to feel more beautiful in the world? Or do you want her hairdo? You know, do you want more attention? Do you want more admiration? What is it? It can mean so many different things. So we have to really try and understand what does that mean? And then step number three. So step number one is self-honesty about the feelings. Step number two is doing your best to understand them in as much depth as you can, not automatically interpreting them in a concrete way. Step number three is probably the most important. What are you going to do about it? What concrete and practical step can you take to start to embody more that thing that you're admiring or that thing that you're envying? And start with the smallest possible thing. We want to set ourselves up for success. So just doing something, however small it is, to take a step in that direction and then sticking with it. Mm-hmm. I think it sets up a virtuous cycle. Like on the one hand, the more secure we feel in ourselves, the better able we are to admit our admiration and our envy. Mm-hmm. The more we do this process that I just described, trying to embody it, the more secure we feel in ourselves. So it's a nice synergy that gets going.
Yeah, absolutely. I really love that practice. It's kind of like it's a whole other topic in itself, you know, self-honesty. That could be a whole different podcast, but it really helps with today's discussion about admiring others, because I think when we learn why we're feeling a certain way, it helps us to admire others in a more healthy, balanced way, rather than, you know, that will not turn into envy as often. You know, sometimes it might, and that's okay, but at least we learn why we are feeling a certain way and what it is that we're admiring from other people, so we can sort of, like you were saying, with the example of yourself, you know, putting yourself out there and being on podcast, to kind of moderate our behavior a little bit better. And, you know, instead of just sitting there and thinking, oh, like, there's something about this person that is really ticking me off. It's kind of like, oh, actually, there's something from this person I can learn from, you know? And I think that's super cool. I really love that. Thank you for sharing that with our audience.
Yeah, by the way, this works both directions. First, I recommend if somebody's really bugging you, first thing to do is ask yourself if you're envious of them.
Yeah.
Also, if somebody's really hostile toward you, ask yourself, are they maybe envious of you?
Mm.
It's really, envy is the master of disguise. But it shows up in many, many, many different ways. It's very seldom that somebody will come up to you and say, I'm envious of you, or that we feel the confidence to say that to someone else.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Really love that. Great practice. Thank you. Now, we're towards the end of the podcast already. Time flies. We've learned quite a bit today, and I think it's a really good topic to discuss at all times. You know, sometimes we just don't really pay attention to how we feel about the people and how our behaviors are sort of being affected. But I think today we learned a new angle of that, which is, you know, like, you got to be honest with yourself about how you're feeling, why you're feeling a certain way. And, you know, in the process of admiring things from other people, we truly need to look inwards as well. You know, we need to have a really strong sense of self. And I think that's a really great reminder to everyone, because I know a lot of people struggle with this. You know, like, they feel lost and they look for inspiration, and then by doing so, they feel even more lost. So, you know, like, this is a really good thing that you've shared with the audience today. But before we let you go, we have open mic. And as I mentioned earlier, before we started, this is your platform to talk about anything you are passionate about. It doesn't have to be about today's topic. Could be about anything else that you do in your work. So the floor is all yours. Go for it, Josh.
And how much time do we have for this, Lou?
You can go up to 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have just recently begun, it's a few years now that I've been working with psychedelics and psychotherapy. And what I'm finding is that, first of all, there's only so much that we can take care of using verbal therapy. And we've known this for a long time. There's all kinds of alternative therapies that have been developed, body work and, you know, other modalities. And I've used some of them. But psychedelics, which, again, I don't know Australia's rules, but in the United States, they have been illegal for many years, and they're just now starting to become more available and more accessible, allow people to take care of things in a few sessions that would take years otherwise, or if it's possible at all. And it's just, to me, it seems like a whole new frontier. I don't want to oversell it. I don't want to say that it fixes everything. I don't want to say that there's no problems. And I don't want to say that it can help everyone, because none of those things are true. But in certain circumstances, for a certain population, it can really, really do some amazing things for people. So I don't know if you wanted me to give some examples or if you wanted to ask questions or where you want me to go with this.
Well, I don't have any follow-up questions, but feel free to talk more about it if you like. You can give some more examples.
Yeah. Well, for example, I have one client who had a solitaire addiction. She would play solitaire on her phone for over 3 hours every day. And the psychedelic that we use in the United States, the only one that's right now legal, is called ketamine. Her very first ketamine session, she wasn't even focusing on the solitaire addiction. Her very first ketamine session, the solitaire addiction just dropped away and never came back. It was just, she couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It's like, how does that happen? We don't know. We don't understand about it. I would speculate that what psychedelics allow us to do is to tap into and connect to a much, much bigger version of who we are. And from that much bigger place, the language I would use is the soul. But if other people don't like that, just say a much, much bigger place. From that much bigger place, we have much greater sense of agency and control in our lives, and we are more driving our ship rather than being buffeted by daily life. So I'll stop there.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing. That is certainly a fascinating topic. It's like a new thing to me. Like, I've been learning a bit more about it every day. So that's definitely interesting. And again, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really nice chatting to you and hearing your perspective. If our audience would like to find out more about your work, where should they go?
Probably the easiest is my website, which is my name, joshgressel.com. That's joshgressel.com.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thanks again for joining us today. I think this has been really nice.
My pleasure.
You have been listening to Sarah Boost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast produced by the Happiness Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 Life Management Perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, share, and subscribe to our channel so that other people can find it and we can continue to provide quality content. More of our work can be found on our website, ha.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Lu Ngo. Thanks for tuning in.